She thrilled at her power, the proof of it right before her and measurable. He was at 136.
Want me to try something? She said.
I do,
he whispered, his breath labored. She reached down into the folds of his pants and found his penis pressing up against his belt buckle. She rubbed its tip with her index finger, and together they watched the numbers rise to 152.
You're so easy to excite, she said.
Imagine if something were really happening.
His eyes were closed.
Right?
He finally said, his breath labored.
You're enjoying this?
She asked.
Mm-hmm,
he managed. May thrilled at her power over him, watching Francis, his hands on the bed, his penis straining against his pants. She thought of something she could say. It was corny, and she would never say it if she thought anyone would ever know she'd said it, but it made her smile, and she knew it would send Francis, this shy boy, over the edge.
What else does that measure?
She asked, and lunged. His eyes went wild, and he struggled with his pants, trying to remove them. But just as he pulled them to his thighs, a sound came from his mouth, something like, oh God, or I gotta, just before he doubled over, his head jerking left and right until he crumpled on the bed, his head to the wall. She backed away, looking at him, his shirt hiked up, his crotch exposed. She could think only of a campfire, one small log, all of it doused in milk.
Sorry, he said.
No, I liked that, she said.
That was about as sudden as it's ever happened with me.
He was still breathing heavily, and then some rogue synapse within her connected this scene to her father, to seeing him on the couch, helpless over his body, and she wanted badly to be somewhere else.
I should go, she said.
Really? Why?
He said.
It's after one. I should sleep.
Okay,
he said, in a way that she found unappealing. He seemed to want her gone as much as she wanted to be gone. He stood and retrieved his phone, which had been propped upright on the cabinet, facing them.
What, were you filming us?
She joked.
Maybe,
he said, his tone making clear that he had.
Wait, seriously?
May reached for the phone.
Don't, he said. It's mine.
He shoved it into his pocket.
It's yours? What we just did is yours?
It's just as much mine as yours, and I was the one having, you know, a climax. And why do you care? You weren't naked or anything.
Francis, I can't believe this. Delete that, now.
Did you say delete?
He said, jokingly, but the meaning was clear. We don't delete at the circle.
I have to have a way to see it myself.
Then everyone can see it.
I won't advertise it or anything.
Francis, please.
Come on, May. You have to understand how much this means to me. I'm not some stud. This is a rare occasion for me to have something like this happen. Can't I keep a memento of the experience?
You can't worry,
Annie said. They were in the great room of the Enlightenment. In a rare occurrence, Stenton was to give the ideas talk, with the promise of a special guest.
But I am worrying, May said.
She'd been unable to concentrate in the week since her encounter with Francis. The video hadn't been viewed by anyone else, but if it was on his phone, it was in the circle cloud and accessible to anyone. More than anything, she was disappointed in herself. She'd let the same man do the same thing to her twice.
Don't ask me again to delete it,
Annie said, waving to a few senior circlers in the crowd, members of the Gang of 40.
Please delete it. You know I can't. We don't delete here, May. Bailey would freak. He'd weep. It hurts him personally when anyone even considers the deleting of any information. It's like killing babies, he says. You know that. But this baby's giving a hand job. No one wants that baby. We need to delete that baby. No one will ever see it. You know that. 99% of the stuff in the cloud is never seen by anyone. If it even gets one view, we can talk again. Okay?
Annie put her hand on May's.
Now watch this. You don't know how rare it is to have Stenton doing the address. This must be big, and it must involve some kind of government thing. That's his niche.
You don't know what he's about to say?
I have some idea, she said.
Stenton took the stage without an introduction. The audience applauded, but in a way that was markedly different from the way they had for Bailey. Bailey was their talented uncle who had saved every one of their lives personally. Stenton was their boss, for whom they had to act professionally and clap professionally. In a flawless black suit, no tie, he walked to the center of the stage, and without introducing himself or saying hello, he began.
As you know, he said, transparency is something we advocate here at the Circle. We look to a guy like Stewart as an inspiration, a man who's willing to open up his life to further our collective knowledge. He's been filming, recording, every moment of his life now for 5 years, and it's been an invaluable asset to the Circle, and soon, I bet, to all of humankind.
Stewart? Stenton looked out to the audience and found Stewart, the transparent man, standing with what looked like a small telephoto lens around his neck. He was bald, about 60, bending slightly as if from the weight of the device resting on his chest. He got a warm round of applause before sitting down.
Meanwhile, Stenton said, there's another area of public life where we want and expect transparency, and that's democracy. We're lucky to have been born and raised in a democracy, but one that is always undergoing improvements. When I was a kid, to combat backroom political deals, for example, citizens insisted upon sunshine laws. These laws give citizens access to meetings, to transcripts. They could attend public hearings and petition for documents. And yet still, so long after the founding of this democracy, every day our elected leaders still find themselves embroiled in some scandal or another, usually involving them doing something they shouldn't be doing. Something secretive, illegal, against the will and best interests of the Republic. No wonder public trust for Congress is at 11%. There was a wave of murmuring from the audience. Stenton fed off it. Congressional approval is actually at 11%. And as you know, a certain senator was just revealed to be involved in some very unsavory business.
The crowd laughed, cheered, tittered. May leaned to Annie.
Wait, what senator?
Williamson, you didn't hear? She got busted for all kinds of weird stuff. She's under investigation for a half dozen things, all kinds of ethical violations. They found everything on her computer, 100 weird searches, downloads, some very creepy stuff.
May thought, unwillingly, of Francis. She turned her attention back to Stenton.
Your occupation could be dropping human feces on the heads of senior citizens, he said. And your job approval would be higher than 11%. So what can be done? What can be done to restore the people's trust in their elected leaders? I am happy to say that there's a woman who is taking all this very seriously, and she's doing something to address the issue. Let me introduce Olivia Santos, representative from District 14.
A stout woman of about 50, wearing a red suit and a yellow floral scarf, strode from the wings, both arms waving high over her head. From the scattered and polite applause, it was clear that few in the great hall knew who she was. Stenton gave her a stiff hug, and as she stood beside him, her hands clasped in front of her, he continued.
For those who need a civics refresher, Congresswoman Santos represents this very district. It's okay if you didn't know her. Now you do.
He turned to her.
How are you today, Congresswoman?
I'm fine, Tom, very fine. Very happy to be here.
Stenton offered his version of a warm smile to her and then turned back to the audience.
Congresswoman Santos is here to announce what I must say is a very important development in the history of government, and that is a move toward the ultimate transparency that we've all sought from our elected leaders since the birth of representative democracy. Congresswoman?
Stenton stepped back and sat behind her on a high stool. Representative Santos moved to the front of the stage, hands now entwined behind her, and swept her eyes over the room.
That's right, Tom. I'm as concerned as you are about the need for citizens to know what their elected leaders are doing. I mean, it is your right, is it not? It's your right to know how they spend their days, who they're meeting with, who they're talking to, what they're doing on the taxpayer's dime. Until now, it's been an ad hoc system of accountability. Senators and representatives, mayors and councilpersons have occasionally released their schedules and have allowed citizens varying degrees of access. But still we wonder, why are they meeting with that former senator-turned-lobbyist? And how did that congressman get that $150,000 the FBI found hidden in his fridge? How did that other senator arrange and carry out trysts with a series of women while his wife was undergoing cancer treatment? I mean, the array of misdeeds carried out while these officials were being paid by you, the citizenry, is not only deplorable, not only unacceptable, but also unnecessary.
There was a smattering of applause. Santos smiled, nodded, and continued.
We've all wanted and expected transparency from our elected leaders, but the technology wasn't there to make it fully possible. But now it is. As Stewart has demonstrated, it's very easy to provide the world at large full access to your day to see what you see, hear what you hear, and what you say. Thank you for your courage, Stewart.
The audience applauded again for Stewart with new vigor, some of them guessing what Santos was about to announce.
So I intend to follow Stewart on his path of illumination, and along the way, I intend to show how democracy can and should be. Entirely open, entirely transparent. Starting today, I will be wearing the same device that Stewart wears. My every meeting, movement, my every word will be available to all my constituents and to the world.
Stanton got off his stool and made his way to Santos. He looked out to the assembled circlers.
Can we give Congresswoman Santos a round of applause?
But the audience was already clapping. There were whoops and whistles, and Santos beamed. While they roared, a technician emerged from the wings and hung a necklace around Santos's head, a smaller version of the camera Stewart had been wearing. Santos held the lens to her lips and kissed it. The audience cheered. After a minute, Stanton raised his hands, and the crowd quieted. He turned to Santos.
So you're saying that every conversation, every meeting, every part of your day will be broadcast?
Yes. It will all be available on my circle page, every moment till I sleep.
The audience applauded again, and Stanton indulged them, then again asked for quiet.
And what if those who want to meet with you don't want a given meeting to be broadcast?
Well, then, they will not meet with me, she said. You're either transparent or you're not. You're either accountable or you're not. What would anyone have to say to me that couldn't be said in public? What part of representing the people should not be known by the very people I'm representing?
The applause was drowning her out.
Indeed, Stanton said.
Thank you, thank you,
Santos said, bowing, putting her palms together in a posture of prayer. The applause continued for minutes. Finally, Stanton gestured for calm once more.
So, when are you starting this new program?
He asked.
No time like the present, she said.
She pushed a button on the device around her neck, and there it was, the view from her camera projected on the giant screen behind her. The audience saw itself with great clarity and roared with approval.
It begins now for me, Tom, she said. And I hope it begins soon for the rest of the elected leaders in this country and for those in every one of the world's democracies.
She bowed. She put her hands together again and then began to walk off the stage. As she was nearing the curtains at stage left, she stopped.
There's no reason for me to go that way. Too dark. I'm going this way, she said,
and the lights in the auditorium came on as she stepped down to the floor into the bright light, the room's thousand faces suddenly visible and cheering. She walked straight up the aisle, all the hands reaching to her, grinning faces telling her, thank you, go forth and make us proud. That night in the colony, there was a reception for Congresswoman Santos, and she continued to be swarmed with new admirers. May briefly entertained the notion of trying to get close enough to shake her hand, but the crowd around her was five deep all night, so instead May ate from the buffet, some kind of shredded pork that had been made on campus, and waited for Annie. She'd said she would try to make it down, but was on a deadline, preparing something for a hearing at the EU. They're whining about taxes again, she said. May wandered the room, which had been decorated in a vaguely desert theme, with smatterings of cacti and sandstone in front of walls of digital sunsets. She saw and said hello to Dan and Jared and a few of the newbies she'd been training. She looked for Francis, hoping he wouldn't be there, but then remembered with great relief that he was at a conference in Las Vegas, a gathering of law enforcement agencies he was introducing to Child Track. As she wandered, a wall-screen sunset faded to make way for the face of Ty. His face was unshaven, and there were bags under his eyes, and though he was clearly and thoroughly tired, he was smiling broadly. He was wearing his customary oversized black hoodie and took a moment to clean his glasses on his sleeve before looking out at the room, left and right, as if he could see them all from wherever he was. Maybe he could. The room quickly hushed.
"Hey, everyone. Sorry I can't be there with you all. I've been working on some very interesting new projects that are keeping me away from incredible social activities like the one you're enjoying, but I did want to congratulate you all on this phenomenal new development. I think it's a crucial new step for the Circle and will mean a great deal to our overall awesomeness."
For a second, he seemed to be looking at whoever was operating the camera, as if confirming he'd said enough. Then his eyes returned to look into the room.
"Thank you all for your hard work on it, and let the party truly begin."
His face disappeared, and the wall screen again displayed the digital sunset. May chatted with some of the newbies in her pod, some of whom hadn't seen any live addresses from Ty before and were close to euphoric. May took a picture, zinged it, and added a few words.
"Exciting stuff."
May picked up her second glass of wine, deciding how she could do so without taking the napkin under it, which would serve no purpose and end up in her pocket, when she saw Calden. He was in a shadowy stairwell, sitting on the steps. She meandered her way over to him, and when he saw her, his face brightened.
"Oh, hi," he said.
"Oh, hi?" "Sorry," he said, and leaned into her, intending a hug. She recoiled.
"Where have you been?"
"Ben?"
"You disappeared for 2 weeks,"
May said.
"It hasn't been that long, has it? And I've been around. I looked for you one day, but you looked busy."
"You came to see E?"
"I did, but I didn't want to bother you."
"And you couldn't leave a message somehow?"
"I didn't know your last name," he said, smiling as if he knew far more than he was letting on.
"Why didn't you contact me?"
"I didn't know your last name either, and there's no Calden listed anywhere."
"Really? How are you spelling it?" May began to enumerate the permutations she'd tried when he interrupted.
"Listen, it doesn't matter. We both screwed up, and now we're here."
May stepped back to take him in, thinking maybe somewhere on him she would find some clue as to whether or not he was real, a real circler, a real person. Again, he was wearing a snug long-sleeved shirt, this one with narrow horizontal stripes in greens and reds and browns, and again he had maneuvered his way into very narrow black pants that gave his legs the look of an inverted V.
"You do work here, right?" she asked.
"Of course. How else could I get in? Security is pretty good here,
especially on a day like today with our luminous guest." He nodded to the congresswoman, who was signing her name on someone's tablet.
"You look like you're ready to leave," May said.
"Do I?" Calden said.
No, I'm just comfortable back here. I like to sit during these things, and I guess I like to have the option of fleeing."
He threw his thumb over his shoulder, indicating the stairs behind him.
"I'm just glad my supervisors saw me here," May said. "That was my first priority. Do you have to be seen here by a supervisor or anything?"
"Supervisor?" For a moment, Calden looked at her as if she'd just said something in a familiar and yet incomprehensible language.
"Oh, yeah," he said, nodding. "They saw me here. I took care of that."
"Have you told me what you do here yet?"
I don't know. Have I?"
"Look at that guy."
"What guy?"
"Oh, never mind," Calden said, seeming to have already forgotten whom he was looking at.
"So you're in PR?"
"No, customer experience." Calden tilted his head.
Oh, I knew that," he said, unconvincingly.
"You've been there a while?" May had to laugh.
The man was not all there. His mind seemed barely tethered to his body, much less the earth.